Good morning and welcome back to Central Standard. Our guest for the duration of today's show is Brian Fuchs, a climatologist with the National Drought Mitigation Center. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Well, I want to start off just getting right into it with you. Last week, it rained really hard and thundered through the night. When I woke up, it was still raining and the ground was soaked. And I dared to hope that maybe we would get enough rain to finally pull us out of the drought. But when I checked the KCUR website, of course, I quickly spotted the following headline: Recent heavy rains won't eliminate drought in Kansas. It feels like we keep getting heavy rains and we keep hearing the same news that it's not enough. So how much rain does Kansas need to get out of the drought?
You know, it is a complex situation where we need to take into account the short-term benefits, meaning these rains that we've had recently over the last 4 to 6 weeks, and also the long-term degradation in the region that we really need to try to identify what areas we have seen improvement and what areas we have still some room to make up. And so when you look at it on just a precipitation point of view, these rains have been very beneficial, but we need to see more than just one or two events. We need to see this consistent rain through most of the summer before we can see a lot of the impacts from the long-term dryness that we've seen in the region go away.
So can we back up a second and just get a definition of drought before we go too much further? How do we know when we've gone from like, well, it sure is a dry summer, to this is a full-blown drought situation?
And you know that in the climate field, especially in the work that I do with drought, there is not a standard universal definition for drought. And my joke is if I put 10 climatologists in the room and tell them to write down their definition of drought, you're probably going to get 10 similar answers, but they're probably also going to have some differences. In the grand scheme of things, you're basically looking at the water balance of a region and when you have a deficit in that balance, meaning a lack of precipitation, a lack of groundwater, or lack of water in the rivers and streams that accumulates into a drought situation. And we have different tools that we use to identify the drought in a region. And it's not just precipitation. We do look at many other indicators that play into that water balance situation for any particular region.
So the other kinds of water, not precipitation, but groundwater and water in streams and other water bodies on the ground, would those be the ones that make the difference when we keep getting more precipitation and it keeps not pulling us out of the drought?
Yeah, you're exactly right. When we start looking at the impact of these recent rains, and definitely for the folks in agriculture, they have been very beneficial for your gardeners and those that have flower beds and lawns. It's been very beneficial because that top 8 to 12 inches of the soil is fairly saturated with moisture from these rain events. And like you said, they've been long-term rain events, meaning that it hasn't just been a brief downpour, but some of these events have went on for several hours, which is very beneficial. When we start looking into the long-term problems of the region, we do look at how much water it's going to take to get the river and streams back to their normal flows and how much storage is available in some of the reservoirs, how far down were they before these rains started. And so what we can look at is when we have these rain events, like you mentioned, how much change do we see in the hydrology of the region? How much change
what
do we see
hydrology?
In that? Hydrology is really the rivers and streams, the lakes and reservoirs, and even the groundwater, that when we get these rains, we like you said, we'll see some ponding of that water, even see runoff. And so what we're identifying is how much change or how much improvement do these rain events bring? How much moisture is going into that soil profile? And how far down into the soil is that moisture reaching? And realistically, what we're seeing in the region is, again, that those top few inches of the soil are doing very well, but the deeper you go, it is still dry.
How would you overall characterize the situation in Kansas right now?
Well, I think if I had to, I'd have to draw an imaginary line right through the center of the state and compare the eastern portion of the state to the western. And the eastern portion of the state is where we can identify where these recent rain events have been beneficial. We're not seeing as many impacts because of the long-term dryness in the region, so we are able to start showing recovery a little bit quicker than we do on the western side of the state. out in western Kansas, very similar to their neighbors to the south in Oklahoma and Texas, where this has been a multi-year, longer-term drought event. And the drought had been fairly intense in a lot of those regions, meaning that we were seeing on the U.S. Drought Monitor some extreme to exceptional drought, which is as bad as we do show on the map. So with that in mind, even when we do see these events, sometimes it's just holding the drought in check, and it's not having it get worse. And it's going to take a lot more precipitation in those areas to show recovery.
Why do there's some degree to which this is kind of obvious that it the more dry something is, the more water it takes to get you out of that dryness. But it seems like it's not really a one-to-one kind of thing. Like we're 1 inch of moisture away from being out of drought, but we need more than an inch of water to get us out of it. So how, what are the other factors that make it harder to recover the more serious the drought it becomes?
Well, especially in portions of western Kansas where we have seen this long-term multi-year drought event taking place, it really comes down to the impacts. How has that region been impacted by the drought, and what does it take to have those impacts recover? And so when I start talking about drought-related impacts, I'm really looking at water storage is a big one. What do these rivers and streams and reservoirs need to bring them back up to normal levels for this time of year? Soil moisture and ground or moisture in the ground is also key, that as we go deeper into the soils, they are very dry, and it does take a time, and it does take many rain events to get that water to percolate down into the deeper depths of the soil. And the other thing we look at is some of the agricultural type of impacts. I know winter wheat is a big commodity out in western Kansas, and you know, what would it take to get the wheat crop to be in better shape than it is in? And at some point, that wheat crop is going to be too far along to actually improve it for this growing season.
As our one of my colleagues said in the studio this morning, the wheat crop is toast, and I hear that it's hard to damage wheat crop. That we have to be in a very serious drought for that to happen.
Yeah, and the wheat crop really got hit with two punches this year. Not only was the drought impacting it, but also some of that late cold weather that we had with some of the freezing temperatures also impacted the wheat crop, and that was all the way down into Texas. So not only were we dealing with a crop that had been impacted and hurt by the drought, but then we threw in that late cold snap that we saw on a couple different days, and it really hurt. And the other thing we look at, too, especially out in the western part of Kansas, is some of these range and pasture lands that cattlemen are using. Sometimes even when more often than not, even when rains return, it really comes down to how those grasslands and pastures were managed as to how quickly they will return to production and be utilized for grazing and forage again for those cattle. So like you said, it isn't a one-to-one relationship, but it does become complex, and it really does come down to what type of impacts are being felt in that region.
Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in Missouri right now? It looks like a small portion of Missouri entered a moderate drought. And I guess compared to what's going on nationwide, a moderate drought barely hits our radar anymore, sadly. But what's going on in Missouri?
In Missouri, what we're seeing, again, is whereas in Kansas I divided the state almost east and west as two different stories, in Missouri it's almost north versus south. And the northern portions of the state have done really well, and we've seen quite a bit of improvement. Almost all that area from the north of I-70 has done fairly well. And as you get further south of I-70, you can really start seeing that some of these areas have missed out not only on rains here in June, but also in May and March and April. And those deficits really built up. And some of these areas just over the last 90 to 120 days have deficits upwards of 8 to 10 inches of rain that they did not receive. And as we start getting into summer here, we start seeing those impacts develop, not only to agriculture, but even potential water supply problems developing in these areas. And it's very similar to some of what we're seeing in eastern Oklahoma as well, that the areas that have missed out on the spring and early summer rains are starting to show problems right away.
The Drought Mitigation Center, which is the organization where you work, has put out a press release calling this drought in the Great Plains a new dust bowl and referring to our current era as the terrible teens, which is sort of a riff off of the Dirty 30s, the original dust bowl, which was a historically devastating agricultural and economic disaster memorialized for eternity in art and literature. Are we truly in a new dust bowl? And if so, why aren't we experiencing scenes out of the Grapes of Wrath? Is that irrigation, something else?
That's a great question, and we have to almost step back to realize what took place during the 30s. And there was some agricultural practices that were taking place back then that come to find out were not very viable, nor were they very good for land stewardship and soil stewardship back in those days. And so we did learn from some of those mistakes. What we are seeing, though, is with the recent dust storms that we've had on the plains, and these have been real, and they've impacted parts of southwest Kansas and eastern Colorado, the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles, and even eastern New Mexico through the winter months and early spring. And what we saw was, again, it comes down to this duration of drought that, very similar to what we saw in the 30s, these long-term drought events just start devastating any vegetation on the ground. And when you don't have any vegetation growing, there's nothing left to hold the soil down. And so you start mobilizing these soil particles, and we do have records of dust storms taking place. Now, with that being said, I do think technology has lent us quite a bit of help during this situation, in that we're not seeing this mass migration of folks out of the region because of the dust storms, or we're not seeing the widespread dust storms that we did in the Dirty 30s. But we are seeing some people that are having some hardship, and it is more localized right now. But for those that have been influenced or fell under the occurrence of these dust storms, they are showing some of these same problems that we saw in the 30s.
So do I hear you kind of saying that, like, the underlying condition is essentially the same, but that the technology in some ways protects us from feeling that effect?
Yeah, the technology that we have, and some of that has been irrigation, and much of it has been in our agricultural practices and conservation practices that just weren't in place in the 30s. It definitely has helped to offset potential problems or more widespread problems of these dust storms that we have had in 2014 compared to in the 30s.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I'm talking with Brian Fuchs. He's a climatologist, and he joins us from a station in Nebraska. He works for the National Center for Drought Mitigation. And Brian, the maps that your organization and others sort of share on their websites are interesting. People who check those a lot, because a lot of people are very worried about this, have noticed that some lines around Kansas and Missouri have hardly changed through this spring, even through heavy rainfalls and thunderstorms, and that they used to change really frequently, seemingly in concert with the weather we experience on the ground. Has the way you measure this stuff changed, or is something else going on?
No, the methodology being used to put out the U.S. Drought Monitor map each week has been consistent, and this year has been fairly unique, and a lot of what we saw in the plains in the Midwest was very similar, in that through the winter months and also into the early spring, conditions were very dry. And if you go back to some of the snowstorms we saw in portions of the region, folks there are going to say, well, what do you mean it was very dry? We had some record-breaking snows.
That's what I was going to say, in fact.
And what we saw was a lot of these were isolated. And even with snow, it typically takes 20 to 25 inches of snow to equate to 1 inch of liquid water. So as we went into spring, there was a lot of discussion with the group that puts together the Drought Monitor. And within the states of Kansas and Missouri, there are great networks of people that communicate information for those states up to the authors of the Drought Monitor. And from the state climate offices in Kansas and Missouri, both Pat Ganan in Missouri and Mary Knapp in Kansas, they do a good job of gathering local information and passing it up to us. And so one of the issues we had going into the early part of spring and even the middle part of spring was, even though we had this dryness, there wasn't a lot of problems associated with it. And the voices were telling us that as we move closer to spring and more into the middle part of spring and early summer, if we continue to see this dryness, we're going to see rapid changes on the map as far as worsening drought conditions. Well, then we hit about the middle part of May, and we started seeing this more frequent precipitation pattern through the region and in many areas excessive rain. And so that really put the brakes on a situation where we were looking at maybe rapid intensification or spreading of drought in the region to almost, okay, we've really held the pattern in check and even starting to show some improvements. But there was quite a bit of deficit to make up at that point, and that's why we're not seeing this rapid response to the rains that we typically may have seen, because there was a very very prominent dry situation that was being exposed. We just hadn't pulled the trigger yet on the national map to show those degradations in the region, but we were very much considering that before these rains came in.
That is interesting, because then it sounds like what we're feeling, that it feels like it's raining a lot, that that's true, and that we are actually preventing things. Not we are preventing them, but the rain is preventing a worsening of the drought, which is in fact what you had been predicting. So we are staying the same, and that's a good thing?
Yeah, it is. And I think, looking into the future a little bit, the outlooks and the forecast are looking like much of this same region is going to stay in a fairly active and wet pattern. So what that means is maybe we haven't made these changes initially as these the first couple weeks of rain have come to the region. But after that, if we continue to see this consistent rain, we will start seeing more improvements in the region, especially for those areas that pick up the most precipitation.
Are we at a point of no return on any kinds of crops or any kinds of specifics regarding this situation, or will this improvement that we're talking about sort of make it as though the last few years never happened, possibly?
Well, we came off of a couple unique years in that in 2011 we had the floods along the Missouri River Basin. In 2012, we had this devastating drought through much of the plains and Midwest that developed quite rapidly. And then in 2013, we kind of held in a holding pattern for many of these areas. We did see some improvement over 2012, but not full recovery. And so going into 2014, we had a situation where local conditions were varying quite a bit from place to place, and it was also going to be a summary of not only the current year, but also what happened over the last couple of years. And so in some of these areas, we have been able to identify that the drought conditions did improve and recovery is a little easier to show. But in other areas, especially when we start looking at agriculture, again, it comes down to those impacts, how much damage was done to the pasture and grazing lands, and how much deep soil moisture is available. And I know in parts of eastern Kansas and through much of northern Missouri and even into Illinois and Iowa and Nebraska as well, that as you go deeper into that soil, their conditions are still fairly dry. And so as we go into summer, temperatures increase, water demand increase, and our row crops, especially corn and soybeans, need to start utilizing that moisture in the soil when we don't have the frequent rain events. And so as those plants send roots deeper down and there's not as much moisture available, we could still start seeing some drought-related impacts, even as wet as it's been this spring.
When you're coming up with all this information and compiling it and making sense of it for people through tools like the maps that you put out, do you go out and do field research? Do you interview farmers? How do you come up with the sort of anecdotal kind of information that you're talking about? Because some of it is inches of precipitation and fairly objective pieces of information. But some of the things you're describing are observations.
Yeah, there is a subjective side to the U.S. Drought Monitor. And I mentioned the two state climatologists in both Kansas and Missouri, and they're part of a network of about 400 what we call local experts around the country that provide this information, this anecdotal, subjective information that sometimes doesn't show up in the weather and climate data that we look at. And so they are a very important part to this process. And realistically, the U.S. Drought Monitor would not be as good of a product as it is without those folks contributing, because they're involved each week. They have their network of people throughout their states through University Extension or through the Weather Service offices that they're in contact with. And what they do is they gather a lot of information on drought-related impacts or drought problems, or maybe some type of anecdotal information that just isn't readily available on a national scale. And they send that up to the authors, and it really does help us almost ground truth the map as we're making it each week. And so those contribution of those local experts around the country is vital to the process that is the U.S. Drought Monitor.
When they're collecting the observations of people on the ground, are they also collecting kind of the opinions and attitudes of people on the ground? Is there a sense of how worried people are, particularly farmers?
Most definitely. And we hear a lot of these stories coming out of some of these areas that have been in long-term drought, such as southern Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas, where there are folks that have just been beaten down over the last several years, and they just don't know where they can turn to or what hope they have left. And again, we go back to the 30s and some of the same types of stories of these resilient ranchers and resilient farmers that have tried to do their best through these drought situations, but they just keep getting beaten down. And those stories come out, and you hear a lot of personal plight and these personal stories of these ranches that have been in families for three or four generations, and they finally sold out during this last drought event because they just couldn't continue. And sometimes the economics starts impacting people. You think of small town rural America, and you think of these small towns in Kansas, Nebraska, and Missouri, and agriculture runs the economies of these local towns, these small towns. So when you start seeing problems with agriculture due to drought, and you start seeing less money and that going through these communities. And so it definitely becomes personal to these folks. And again, we try to do the best we can to make sure that we're accurately depicting the drought on the map, because there are some programs, relief programs in agriculture that USDA has come out with that are directly tied to the U.S. Drought Monitor. So with that in mind, we want to be as accurate as we can, and we want to be as best as we can in showing drought. But we also need to be neutral in that we just don't put drought out there because we know there's programs tied to it. We have to be scientific, and we have to defend and be able to quantify what we show on the map.
The 1930s, that Dust Bowl is something that we came out of, and we came out of it partly because behaviors changed, partly the idea of stewardship of the land is a real legacy of that period. But also, I do wonder right now, with many years of drought conditions being very persistent, is there any talk of changing our idea of what normal is for this part of the country?
That question has come up quite a bit here in the last decade, even, because we've seen a very active drought period, and it seems to have been over some of the same areas over and over again. And, you know, we do look at that, and we do look at, a changing climate or climate variability. And we have to be cognizant of that as a scientist, because if you are comparing a current period to something that just hasn't been seen before, or it's unrealistic to compare it to the recent past, you have to do a better job of analyzing that data and comparing those numbers. And so we do need to be realizing that the climate has been changing. We've definitely seen some impacts in as far as temperature shifts over the years. And a lot of it has been over the last two or three decades. So this change is, we do need to account for it. And I think it is something that's continuing as well.
So you live in the Midwest. You're in Nebraska right now. Are you personally concerned? Do you maybe give us your forecast looking ahead, not just at summer 2014, but really your forecast as a climatologist?
Well, going forward, we are really watching this development of El Nino. And what El Nino is a warming in the waters of the equatorial Pacific. And what that does is it causes weather shifts in the U.S. And during El Nino events, we typically see that from the West Coast through the southern United States, it's a wetter and cooler pattern through the winter months. And in the northern tier of the United States, we see typically a warmer winter and fairly normal as far as precipitation goes. So as we're moving forward in the rest of 2013 into early 2014, I think this high potential of El Nino developing and the associated impacts of more precipitation, especially over these drought areas that we have going, I think that's something we need to watch for, and I think it's a highly likelihood of some improvement to some of these drought areas.
Well, that is sadly all the time we have for today's Central Standard. Brian Fuchs, thank you so much for joining us. Brian,
thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Brian's a climatologist with the National Drought Mitigation Center. To listen back to this conversation, go to kcur.org/Central Standard. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the history of mental health treatment through the lens of the Glor Psychiatric Museum in St. Joseph. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's it for today's Central Standard. Stick around for Up to Date next.